want to welcome you all to House of David. Today we're going to be doing a presentation that deals with Yom in the Hebrew Scriptures. First, we're going to start with a review. We've already covered some of this material previously, just a little bit of it. In front of you, you have a book which contains some information concerning today's presentation. This is we'll call it an experiment. What we're going to do on a regular basis, this is our plan, is we will be handing out an outline of the material that'll already be three-hole punch, and all you'll have to do is just insert it into your book. This gives you an opportunity to follow along with where I am and what I'm talking about to some degree. We do not know yet if the outline that I have created is what we want to have, but an outline was requested and an outline has been provided. So from there, we will make the adjustments that are necessary. Okay, so let's go ahead. One of the things that was requested, because I'm going to be doing so much Hebrew language work today, that it was important for me to let you know exactly what Hebrew text I'm using, and I'm using BHS version 4. The Hebrew text that I'll be using today is from BHS version 4, which is based on the Leningrad Codex. If you don't know what that means, that's okay. It's not going to be a big deal to you, but for those who do know, and if you disagree with some of the Hebrew text that I'm quoting, then you can talk to me about it later. We'll also be taking a break midway through for questions. Another experiment. We're going to see how that goes. Okay, as part of our review, Lori has been talking for the past two meetings about Q16. Q16 has been provided in your book. It's the first page. The Hebrew is on the first side, and the Greek is on the second side. And this deals with the critical thinking course that she's providing. And one of the things that I'm going to be focusing on is Q6 on the Hebrew side. I am going to cover several of the different questions within Q16, and I will list them later. But Q6 is going to be probably, I'm just going to say it's the one that I'm focusing on. And I think that you'll see that as we get into the text. Also, in the last meeting, remember that we discussed the problems of a cubit and what a mean solar day is, being an astronomical technical term. We will be using those in the presentation. Okay, as we discuss the Hebrew word Yom and Genesis 1 and the implications of understanding what these words mean, there are three questions that I want us to keep in mind as we go along. And in the beginning here, most of the focus of this presentation is going to be answering question number one. There are three, but I'm going to be focusing on question number one. And let me just say, like I hope that I say every time I speak, this is what I've found. This is how I understand it. That doesn't make it correct. That just makes, I can present my case, but that doesn't mean that my logic is correct. It doesn't mean that my understanding of the parts of speech in Hebrew are correct or correctly applied. I'm just saying this is how I understand it, and from how I understand it, I draw a conclusion, and you will be judging whether or not the conclusion is on point or not. All right, question number one, if the Almighty performs a separation on something, and you'll see this when I actually lay out some Hebrew text, can those items ever be joined again into a compound unity? That's a very straightforward question. May not make a lot of sense right now, but you'll see it when I actually get to that part. The second question is the Hebrew word Yom. Sometimes it will appear in Hebrew. Sometimes I'll actually put the English letters Y-O-M. Sometimes I'll put both. I can think of a couple places where I have both. When Yom takes a literal value, can it ever mean something besides the daylight part of a 24-hour day? Let me tell you about mean solar day. This is an astronomical technical term which means the amount of time necessary for the Earth to rotate on its axis all the way around to the same point where the sun is shining on the Earth. So it's a very technical definition, and the part that we're dealing with is the daylight part. That's what we're talking about. So, reiterating this question, when Yom takes a literal value, what does that mean? It means it's not taking a figure of speech value. It's taking a literal value. When it takes a literal value, can it ever mean something besides 12 hours? That's the question. And then question number three. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to, from time to time, put DLP in places, and I'm only going to go into this much detail right now. Daylight portion is what that means. So if you're thinking about a 24-hour day as we understand time today, part of the time the sun shines on the earth and where we are, but then when the earth rotates, there's a section of time where the sun is not shining on where we are. That's not the daylight portion for us. That's the nighttime for us. Okay? And three, is it true that the Sabbath of Yahweh starts at sunrise and is only 12 hours long? That's a question that is being asked. Okay? I would say this question is probably either true or false. The answer is either true or the answer is false. That would be what my thinking is. Okay. All right, let's get started. I'm going to go over some words which you had in your outline that was sent to you in an email, but this is also in your outline of your printout. So here we go. First, we're going to look at the word create, which is B-A-R-A, and here you can see it in Genesis 1:1. It is the second word highlighted in yellow. Excuse me. So you have Bereshit, create. Bereshit, bara, Elohim. All right, so you can see create there in Genesis 1:1. In Isaiah 45:7, the word bara also occurs again, and you can see it here. Reading from right to left, including the English, it says, I form light. You can see light is under the word in alignment, and create darkness. So here in Isaiah 45, we see another use of the word bara, which is the Hebrew word for create. It's not the same word as form, which we're going to cover in a minute. It's the word for create. All right, darkness. I don't know if this is Hoshek. I'm sure I will not pronounce all these Hebrew words perfectly, but that's okay. Do not be distracted by that. All right, here we go. In Genesis 1:2, it says, reading the English from right to left, the earth was without form and void and darkness. You can see the word for darkness there. I've highlighted the Hebrew and the English. If we go back to Isaiah 45:7 again, what you will see is, I form light and create darkness. So you can see here are two examples of the word darkness in the Hebrew. Okay? That's all I'm establishing. In Genesis 1:16, the first part of it, the word ashah is translated as made. You know it as made Elohim two lights. And if you go to 1:16, you'll remember that there was a discussion about making two lights, one to rule the yom and one to rule the layel, the night. Okay? Here is 1:16, the beginning part. Made, you see the word made. I have highlighted it in yellow. Let's go back to Isaiah 45:7. This time we're not going to look at asah, we're looking at yatsah, which is the word for form. And you will see in this passage it says, I form light. So you're familiar with this passage. We've gone through it three times now. You see the word for form in the Hebrew, and you see the word for made, ashah, in Hebrew, and you can see that they are not the same word. They are clearly not the same Hebrew word. All right, now, Q10 from Q16. This is a question that frequently comes up that I have to ask and answer as I do my studies. Is there a relationship between asah, which is made, and the word form? Is there a relationship? That is what Q16 at question 10 asks. In 1:25 of Genesis, it says, made, and this is literal Hebrew. I did not try to create a pretty English sentence. I'm just translating it straight as the Hebrew is read. Made Elohim, beasts of the earth. Now, let's move to 2:19. Formed Yahweh Elohim out of the ground, all beasts. So what you can see here is that there is a relationship, there is some type of relationship between the word made and the word formed. And what I discovered was they are synonyms in places. You could say, I made this. You could say, I formed this. And they are synonym. All right. The summary of this section. During the creation of the heavens and the earth, you saw that in verse 2 of Genesis 1, darkness existed. The light did not exist. The darkness was created, and this was confirmed in Isaiah 45:7. It says, I formed light and created darkness. It's exactly how Isaiah 45:7 reads. So my summary from just this little bit of foundation is, during the creation of the heavens and the earth, darkness was created. Light was not created. Okay? 2. The light was not created but formed later out of the creative matter. And where I have that is Isaiah 45:7. The word bara, which means created in Hebrew, does not appear with the word light in Isaiah 45:7. It's asa, formed the light. If you go back to Genesis 1:2, you will see that darkness existed after the heavens and the earth were created. Light had not been formed, because after that he says, let there be light. If light already existed, he would not have said, let there be light. So this is how I'm understanding this text. When the heavens and the earth were created, darkness was created, the light did not exist, then the light came into existence, he formed it. And number 3, as we speak of the light that is found in the first 5 verses of Genesis 1, the same can be said for the sun. The sun was not formed until verse 14. Okay? Now, let's go through the order of events in Genesis, just so we can be clear and see if you agree with my assessment. In the beginning was the Almighty. Then there was the creation of the heavens and the earth, which includes the creation of darkness. Then light was formed. Sun was formed later, just bringing that to your remembrance. Light was separated from darkness. And you know, I was looking at this and I'm going, is there a need to separate something that's already separated? That was the question that came to mind. And I'm thinking to myself, was light ever a part of darkness and then it was separated? Is that why he said that he had to separate it? Very interesting. I don't know the answer to that, but I'm just saying. Light was called Yom. This is the first occurrence. That's why there's a number 1 there. We'll go through a number of Yom occurrences in Genesis chapter 1. And you will know which Yom I'm referring to by the superscript numeral. This is the first one. I had to put cesium 133 because a number of us know what cesium 133 is. It is an element that has a specific decay rate, and they have been able to determine that a certain amount of oscillations, frequency oscillations, equals a second, which is a subset of a minute, which is a subset of an hour, which is a subset of the rotation of the earth. So even without the earth having the sun shining on it so we know what a mean solar day is as it rotates, even without that, we can still know how long a second was. Now, I'm not saying we did know. I'm just saying we could know. All right, that's all I'm saying. All right, 7. We're going to move to Genesis 1, verse 5. This is the Hebrew. I want to point out that we have purple for 2 words and yellow for 1 word. You'll see the superscript 2. This is the second occurrence of Yom. This Hebrew sentence reads, Yaha Erev Yaha Bokur Yom Echad. That's what this sentence in Hebrew is saying. This is the second half of verse 5. Now, here is how I'm understanding this first day. I've called it day one, creation and darkness, and it was Erev, light, and it was Bokur. All right? Continuing, we're going to jump now from day one to day four. Only it's not because we don't care about day two and day three. It's because it's not really important to what we're looking at here. Yom does occur twice, but that's okay. Here we go. There is a separation formed between day and between night. Now you see how I have between, the word between, you see it in red, highlighted. You also see the word yom, which is day, and this is the fifth occurrence. Between is a particle, preposition in Hebrew. All right, and so you know when we are drawing a contrast between two things in the English language, I might say something and then a word and then something. Something or something. I don't put or in front. I don't say or something or something. Hebrew does. I found this difficult for myself. I also found it when they were using conjunctions. Instead of having John and Mary went to the park, they would have and John and Mary went to the park. And I was like, I'm sure there's a good reason for this. I just don't understand what it is. But that's how the conjunction appeared in the Hebrew text. This is how the particle preposition appears. All right, now, number nine. This is occurrence of Yom number six. Reading from right to left in the English, it says, Atz, Moeds, I know it's supposed to be Moedim, but I purposely put Moeds, Yoms, and Years. What is this passage talking about? It talks about the sun, the moon, and the stars during day four, and it says they are given for signs, appointed times, days, and years. That's how most English translations translate verse 14. But I put Atz because that's the Hebrew, and I'm pretty sure it's Moedim, but singular would be Moed, and then, of course, Yom, and in this particular case, Yom is plural. This is the sixth occurrence of Yom. Number 11. Why was the sun created? The text says in verse 16, to rule the Yom, to rule the day, and the moon to rule the Layil, or the night. And the eighth occurrence of Yom, rule over the day. Same section reiterated in verse 18. So here are the order of events as I understand them in Genesis 1. Let's summarize that, and then I'm going to take questions. The first light in Yom, it says, and the light was called Yom. But at that time, there was no sun. The sun had not been formed because this is day one. The sun is formed in day four. You just saw that. You've read Genesis 1, 14 through 18, where it says that the sun was formed at that time. But this is day one. And so Yom, the light, is not the daylight part of a day because there is no such thing without a sun. That's my understanding of the first occurrence of Yom. The second occurrence, a period of time, but once again, not the daylight time because there's no sun. The fifth time, when he says that this is going to be the day, I think the Yom does mean the daylight part. And sixth, when it says Atz, Moedim, Yoms, years, which is signs, appointed times, days, years. I don't know what Yom means there. That's the sixth occurrence. I don't know what it means there. Seven. We're back with the sun is to rule the yom. That's the daylight part. And eight, the sun has been established to rule the yom. Reiteration, verse 18, the daylight part. So as I look at yom's usage in just the first 18 verses of Genesis 1, I see several definitions here. So I found it difficult to say that yom can only mean this and nothing else. I had a problem with that, okay? Because the text does not support it as I understand the text.
I just want to make sure I understand what...
The role of a kod is the Hebrew word. All right, let's see what we got. I sent you all your homework, summary of 15 verses. You all have already looked at all these verses, correct? Very good. Okay, Genesis 8:5, possibly first or beginning. Is that a possible definition? Retrieve thou homework. Thouest homework. Okay. 8:13. Is it possible this could be talking about the first month of the year? What did y'all find? Okay. Anybody else? That's true, but if Yom or Ikad show up in the text and you're not filling in a gap using an italic, which in this case is Ikad does show up, you're right, but we still have to address the value of Ikad as it relates to the rest of the numerics in the verse. Okay, next. 11:1. He said, oh, by the way, just so you know, Ikad can be singular or plural. So, now see, the number one can't be singular or plural. I mean, it has to be, it's singular. There's no onesies. Is there onesies? Is that in the dictionary?
Yeah.
Who's twosies? Okay. Okay, maybe one can be plural. Okay. Ikad can be singular or plural. In this particular verse, it's both singular and plural. The first occurrence is singular. I translated it that all the people had the same language. You could also translate it as one language. Second occurrence is that they spoke the same words. That's Ikad plural. Anybody else got something different? Very good. Next. 11:6. The people are Ikad. I saw that as the people were together against the Almighty. What was that? Oh, okay. All right. And 6b, that the people had the Ikad language. Could be one language. I translated it as the same language because there had not been a separation of languages yet. Unified. That's a good one. I like unified. Okay, let's take a look at Genesis 27:44. You will see Ikad in the yellow. All right, let's take a look at this in the English. Dwell with him for one, this is my literal translation. Dwell with him for one block of yoms until your brother's fury subsides. Okay, now let's take a look. Let's do context of story here. All right. Mother comes to son and says, your brother has comforted himself in the knowledge that he's going to kill you. And he is very happy about it. So mom says, here is my suggestion. Go dwell with my brother. Ikad yoms. Until your brother's fury subsides. So, what is Ikad? What is yom? Okay, a possibility. If we're going to take Ikad and call it one, and we're going to take yom and call it the daylight period, it means go dwell with my brother for one daylight period until your brother's fury subsides. I really don't think that's accurate. So in this particular case, I think we're talking about a block of time, because the until tells me that she's not trying to predict when the fury will subside. She's taking note that at some point in time, the fury will subside. And until that date, I want you to dwell with my brother for an amount of time. Yom here is not a daylight period. Do not go and dwell with my brother for one daylight period. It makes no sense following the rest of the sentence. Okay? So I chose a block of yoms. That was how I translated it. And this is even a more clear way to translate it. I called it reality. Dwell with him for as long as it takes until your brother's fury subsides. That's what I think Akkad Yoms means here. Anybody? We're good? And I put this in because whenever you are thinking about what a word means, what a phrase means, etc., you have to ask the question, the people who were there doing this, what did they understand? And when mother told son to go dwell Akkad Yoms until your brother's fury subsides, did he understand that he was going to spend one daylight period with Laban? I doubt it. Okay? Next. 29:20. Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but Akkad Yoms. Once again, they seemed to him as one daylight period. I don't think that's how Jacob was thinking. But perhaps 7 years, a few days, is reasonable. I put a few daylight periods because if you're going to translate it ultra-literal, that's what you're going to end up with. He served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed like a few daylight periods. I don't think that's what it says. Exodus 24:3. Moses came and told the people all the words of Yahweh and all the judgments, and all the people answered. I think Akkad here means with a united voice. Everybody? Anybody?
Unified.
26:6. And you shall make 50 clasps of gold and join the curtains to one another with the clasps, that the tabernacle may be Akkad. I translated that as a unit, a structure that is connected together. It's multiple parts. It's a compound unity. Anybody? Numbers 14:15. Now if thou dost slay this people, Akkad, all at once is what I put, because the context has Moses approaching the Almighty with a philosophical argument about what are the nations going to say if you do this? And I don't think that the Almighty was thinking about wiping out a few people. I think it was wiping out everybody. So Moses was giving him, cautioning him on behavior. Jordan. Completely? Complete. Complete. Well, we're going to try it on the next one. Okay, let's see if it fits. Anybody else? Really? Excellent. We'll see how this works. Yahweh said unto him, surely I will be with thee, as thou shalt smite the Midianites as easy as a complete man. Okay, so complete is good sometimes. Is that fair? Okay. Versus an incomplete man. Oh, uh-oh. We're not even going there. Okay. Judges 6:16. Yahweh said unto him, surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites. Oh, I'm sorry. I just read that. And all the people arose united. Oh, and all the people rose completed. That's completely. I like it. Zephaniah. For then I will give to the people a pure language, that all of them may call on the name of Yahweh to serve him completely. Kinda. It's not bad. Okay, the problem with this verse is the word shoulder. It's shoulder ikad. So here's how I translated it. Shoulder to shoulder. Which is a figure of speech, which I then retranslated again into solidly united. Does that work for you? Everybody? But I like that complete thing. It's got some stuff going on. Okay. Now, let's talk about new roles of ikad. 12 tribes were united under David. Everybody knows about that, right? After Solomon died, 10 were separated out and given to Jeroboam. What does the future hold for that situation? Say unto them, thus saith Yahweh Elohim, behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, and the tribes of Israel, his fellows, and will put them with the stick of Judah, and make them ikad stick, and they shall be ikad in my hand. What I took from this was something that was together and then divinely separated was, or shall be, divinely reunited, brought back together, completed. And the ikad word is there. The compound unity marker, ikad. All right? A separation rejoined. Here we go. Next. Julie. Male and female were once found within the creation called Adam. You see this in Genesis 5, 1 and 2. Yeshua says, consequently, they are no longer two. So at some point in time, they were two, because prior to being two, they were one. Genesis 5 says they were one. So then they were separated divinely. But Yeshua says, consequently, they are no longer two, but one, flesh. What therefore God has joined together. Okay, who's responsible for the rejoining after the separation? We have a divine separation. We now have a divine rejoining. Let no man separate. What's the text say? Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, cleave to his wife, and there shall be ikad. Compound unity marker appears again in a divine unity that was separated and then reunited. Anybody? Okay. Let's go back and remember question number one. If the Almighty performs a separation on something, can those items ever be joined again into a compound unity? My answer was yes, and my two examples were the two sticks and Adam and Eve. Okay? What about night and day? We're out of time. I will now take questions. This, like I said, this was an experiment, taking questions middle way through to find out if this was going to work, because I only get 45 minutes, and I took 50. Yeah, okay?
Is the rest of this like for next time?
The rest of this will have to be for next time then.
Okay.
That means you will not be receiving a handout because you already have it.
Okay.
So what we will do is we will take the knowledge that we have acquired on the role of ikad, and Greg, we will deal with Yahah fully in its implementation in Genesis 5 and bring it back to Genesis 1. I have it all done. It's all in your outline. Okay? And then we will put the pieces together in Genesis 1 and see if we can figure out what it's saying. That will take place at our next gathering. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for your questions. If you want to talk to me afterwards, this is break time. We start Torah at 5 o'clock. You have 25 minutes. Get your snacks.